Welcome to the HSD podcast series. I'm your host today, Laura Franco, Vice President and Director of Post-Acute Regulatory Strategy. Today, I'm joined by Jennifer Lamb, RN, MBA, and Mock Surveyor for Life Care Services, and we're going to be talking about the new FTAG numbering system and the regulations contained in each of the new FTAGs. With all of the new changes coming from CMS, we felt that this would be an excellent way to take each FTAG and break it down into a much better understanding tag by tag. So welcome, Jennifer. We're happy to have you here today.
Thanks, Laura. I'm happy to be here.
So can you tell our listeners what they can expect to hear and learn from this new series of podcasts that we're doing specifically on the FTAGs?
Yes, of course. We're going to begin by covering one FTAG per podcast contained under the 49 tags identified as substandard quality of care. Substandard quality of care is defined by CMS as having more than one deficiency related to participation requirements under resident behavior and facility practices, quality of life, and quality of care that constitute either immediate jeopardy to resident health and safety, a pattern of or widespread actual harm that is not immediate jeopardy, or a widespread potential for more than minimal harm but less than immediate jeopardy with no actual harm. When a community has repeated substandard quality of care on their state surveys, this can result in denial of payment and state monitoring. This is why the 49 tags that fall under this area are vital to learn and understand. We will be using the State Operations Manual, Appendix PP, Guidance to Surveyors for Long-Term Care Facilities, that will be effective on November 28, 2017. This is the exact same SOM that the surveyors use, and it's in your best interest to know as much as they do so that you are best prepared for your state survey.
Well, then let's go ahead and jump right in. And why don't we start with the first FTAG, which is 550. And why don't we start at the beginning with a definition?
Okay. Defining F-550, this tag refers to the resident's rights and exercise of rights. The resident has the right to a dignified existence, self-determination, and communication with and access to persons and services inside and outside the facility, including those specified in this section. A facility must treat each resident with respect and dignity and care for each resident in a manner and in an environment that promotes maintenance or enhancement of his or her quality of life, recognizing each resident's individuality. The facility must protect and promote the rights of the resident. The facility must provide equal access to quality care regardless of diagnosis, severity of condition, or payment source. A facility must establish and maintain identical policies and practices regarding transfer, discharge, and the provision of services under the state plan for all residents, regardless of payment source. The resident has the right to exercise his or her rights as a resident of the facility and as a citizen or resident of the United States. The facility must ensure that the resident can exercise his or her rights without interference, coercion, discrimination, or reprisal from the facility. Also, the resident has a right to be free of interference, coercion, discrimination, and reprisal from the facility in exercising his or her rights, and to be supported by the facility in the exercise of his or her rights as required under this subpart.
So Jennifer, in listening to that technical definition from the SOM, it stands out to me that the transfer, discharge, and provision of services having identical policies is something that is new. And will we be talking about that in actual operations in a bit?
Absolutely. We will be breaking down each of the subparts of the regulation that I just read, so that we can have a better understanding and that the community can understand exactly how that applies to them.
Okay, super, super. So before we get into that, can you talk about what the intent of this regulation is, the new F-550?
Yes. Every resident is guaranteed certain undeniable rights under federal and state laws and regulations. Every long-term care facility is required to provide residents with those rights and expectations. F-550 is written to provide the communities with a foundation of those rights. Treating our residents with dignity and respect is something we strive to do every single day. As a mock surveyor, I've been to many communities and have seen interactions between the residents and staff, and I know that dignity and respect are foremost in our care. Residents should be treated as individuals and have their preferences and goals in mind when providing care and services. I like to always say, remember the golden rule of treating others as you yourself would want to be treated, because, you know, wouldn't you want someone to listen to you and assist you in meeting your goals and honor your preferences? I believe so, and so do our residents.
So what's changed?
Our communities strive to go above and beyond what CMS has required. And so a lot of these changes that are coming along have not been a shock to the system, so to speak, for our communities, because they're already doing what CMS has required and then just kicking it up a notch. We at LCS already do that. So it hasn't been a big shock to them as far as the new changes. F-550 will be the tag that holds the content that was once found in tags F-151, Exercise of Rights, F-240, Quality of Life, and F-241, Dignity. The major difference is that now there's been the added focus on individuality, respect, and dignity.
So how would this apply to our staff working in our communities and our health centers?
Each person working as part of the team in our communities has an important role to play. There is no job that is too great or too small to make a difference during the survey process. Some of the ways that you can guide yourself to success and avoid an F-550 can be done in the following ways. This isn't an exhaustive list, but it does get you on the right track to being able to understand F-550 and what your role is. The number one thing is know your resident. When you attend a meeting or conference, or if you have ever taken a class, one of the things a facilitator or instructor may do is ask everyone to introduce themselves. This enables each participant to know a little something about their peers. It's a good icebreaker and sets the tone for some teamwork. It is fun to learn something about the people that you work with because it gives a snapshot of who they are and what they may like and dislike. Our residents have their own preferences and should be encouraged to make choices that enhance their lives. Each resident has a personal assessment that reveals the resident's lifestyle and personal choices. It gives the staff a picture of who the resident is and how to address their personal needs. Nothing is worse than hearing staff say that they do not know anything about their residents. Our residents have lives that are rich with history and knowledge, and it's not only a good service to the resident to know who they are and where they came from, but it's also good for the staff to know who their residents are. It's actually a treasure to learn who they are. Encourage and assist residents to dress in their own clothing. There have been times where residents have been seen wearing hospital-type gowns or inappropriate footwear. The simplicity of wearing clothing that suits your personal taste and style goes a long way in how you feel about yourself, and our residents are no different, regardless of their ability to choose. Label clothing in a way that is not obvious. Use a color-coded system or place labels on the inside of the clothing. If you wouldn't wear a sign with your name on the outside of your shirts or pants, the residents wouldn't want to either. Promote dignity. Say that you are given a choice to go to a restaurant, and you can choose to go to a place where the wait staff is pleasant and conversational, linen napkins are used, or on the table next to the silver cutlery and china, or you have a choice of going to a place where the staff is dismissive and rude and serve your food on paper plates and plasticware. Which would you prefer?
I know what I'd prefer, Jennifer, and I think you'd probably prefer the same thing, not the rude staff, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, while once in a while I might like the laid-back atmosphere of paper plates and knowing I don't have to do the dishes, I still want somebody to be nice to me.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So for me, I think that interacting with the residents is very important. They always have something, usually it's amusing and funny and interesting to say. Sometimes it's quite profound, but it's nice to have that interaction. And I think that staff did themselves a disservice by not having those meaningful interactions. I would like to see that staff doesn't stand over residents while they eat. I don't know about you, Laura, but I would be highly uncomfortable if I had somebody standing over me as I was trying to have a meal.
Absolutely. And I think that applies to everybody too.
Okay. Unless the resident prefers to use one, I would like to see that bibs and clothing protectors are avoided. Linen napkins look so much better and make a person feel better about the dining experience. Not only is the bibs and clothing protectors a dignity issue, unless, of course, it's care planned and that's absolutely what they want, but not only does it fall into a dignity issue to use the clothing and the bib, the clothing protectors and the bibs, it also, I've seen or actually heard families say it looks institutional and not home-like, and it actually is a factor in whether or not they place their loved one in a community. They do take a tour and they see how home-like does it look. And that actually has been something that I've been told, that I've seen too many of these clothing protectors and instead of linen napkins. And it's amazing what one little thing can do.
And Jennifer, I think at LCS, we have really done a great job many, many, many years ago to not only not use the word bib and get rid of those types of protectors on our clothing and really go to a more dignified dining experience. Is that your experience also?
Yes, absolutely. When I travel to all of our communities nationwide, I'm seeing that overall the communities are providing linen napkins.
Wonderful.
And that to me is a wonderful thing. Yes.
Yeah, I agree.
Another thing that you can do to avoid the F-550, protect and value the resident's personal space. Knock before entering. Announce who you are. I would say probably 90% of the time that happens, but occasionally people get busy or they simply are maybe new and they don't realize that, you know, that's akin to somebody showing up at your door and throwing your front door open, or worse, maybe your bedroom door, and not announcing themselves. So if that's not something that you would feel comfortable with, the resident's not either, because their room is their home. That's not, yeah, I wouldn't want to have anybody kicking my door open.
You know, something like that is you think is pretty common sense, but I guess in, you know, as people get busy in their day, it could be a simple slip, and then that could result in a citation in 550, which is substandard care, right?
Absolutely, yes. Another thing that I find, and this is something, it's so easy to do because you just get so attached to your residents. And so terms of endearment or names that are not their preferred name slip in. You know, I've heard at times staff say, hey, sweetie, or hun. And it kind of almost depends upon where you are. Actually, in the United States, in some places, that's very, very common. I mean, I live in Missouri. It's extremely common to have somebody come up and say, hey, hon, how's it going? And while I probably personally wouldn't mind it, somebody else might find that to be demeaning. And so it's just better to use a resident's preferred name. And the other thing that kind of falls under this, and this isn't anything pleasant, that's referring to a resident as that feeder or that incontinent woman. I would be very humiliated if I came into the room and was referred, you know, in that way. One of the things I know that I have ran into a few residents that they do have nicknames that they go by, and that's okay. As long as it's documented, that's fantastic. I kind of use an example that in the movie Dirty Dancing, Frances Haussmann goes by Baby. Well, if Baby, you know, got older and was in one of our communities, it'd be okay to call her Baby, but we need to have it documented that Frances doesn't mind being called Baby.
Good point there.
The next thing is to protect the resident's dignity. A resident who has a catheter should have the bag covered with a dignity bag. Staff should never refuse to assist a resident to the bathroom when the resident requests to go when they're in the dining room. It's just never okay to instruct a resident to just go in their incontinence brief as a means of convenience, or ever for that matter. One of the things that we'll be talking about in this series is something called a multiplier. A multiplier is when the state surveyor deems that psychosocial harm has occurred and the sanctions of the citation are then doubled. So if I asked you, Laura, to just go when you were dining with your friends, do you suppose that might cause psychosocial harm?
Absolutely.
Yeah, yes. And it would for me too. And I would dare say it probably would for our residents. And another point that goes along with this multiplier in relation to psychosocial harm, if the resident has dementia or is deemed unable to make decisions for themselves, the surveyor will then actually apply what's called the reasonable person criteria. And this means that the surveyor then has the decision-making power to determine what a reasonable person is and how the actions could affect that person and then apply the multiplier. It's very subjective, but they have that power. So if I can't speak for myself and they feel like something is being done to me that might cause me psychosocial harm, they will add the multiplier and your sanctions have now been doubled because of what they think might not be okay for me. And it's just, it isn't hard to protect someone's dignity and should be one of the most important things that we do for our residents.
So Jennifer, those are really important points when you're talking about the multiplier and the reasonable person. And those are technical parts of the survey process that would expand the severity of the F tag. But I think you bring out a good point that, you know, if we're really focused on dignity and individual personal dignity, that we shouldn't have to worry about any type of a multiplier or reasonable person definition or sanction being put on top of the F tag.
Absolutely. I think that we do a fantastic job in the places that I've traveled to and with the staff I've interacted with and watched their interactions with our residents, I don't see where we would have a problem. So I think that we're doing it well with LCS communities, and I believe that we would be okay. We do preserve the dignity of our residents and we do a fabulous job. Another point that you can do with the F-550 is communicate effectively. Good communication means speaking at a level and pace that a resident can understand. Our residents come from all over the nation, and I dare say probably the world, and from different education backgrounds. Some of our residents have limited hearing or remain seated due to physical limitations, and we should remember to keep hearing assistance devices clean and functioning properly. We should get down on eye level and maintain eye contact with residents who may need to lip read. For the resident with dementia, effective communication may mean meeting the resident where they are and living in the moment with them instead of engaging in an argument or challenging the resident. Effective communication means speaking in such a way to promote understanding and actively listening to gain insight and perspective of what the resident needs. The facility must not establish policies or practices that hamper, compel, treat differently, or retaliate against a resident for exercising his or her rights. Staff should never do anything deliberately that violates a resident's preferences or choice. The resident's autonomy should never be hindered. This applies to residents who are deemed to be justice-involved residents as well. A justice-involved resident is a resident who is under the care of law enforcement, under community supervision, or are inmates of a public institution. Justice-involved residents have the same rights described as all other residents in the facility. The facility may not establish policies or impose conditions on the justice-involved resident that results in restrictions which violate the resident's rights. If a facility accepts responsibility for enforcing restrictive law enforcement terms applied to a resident that are contrary to the requirements for long-term care facilities, then the facility would not be in compliance with federal long-term care requirements. Law enforcement jurisdictions are not to be integrated with the operations of a facility. So, for instance, if you had a resident that was a justice-involved resident and they wanted to restrict their visitors, that would fly in the face of the CMS rules, and so they would end up with a citation. So that is another area that falls under 550, that if you do in fact have residents that are justice-involved, then they have the same rights and privileges as your other residents.
So that's an important piece right there also. Very, very important. So this has been a really good, thorough review of 550 and how to operationalize it a bit. And I think what you said in the beginning was that F-550 actually absorbs information that was in the old F-tags 151, 240, and 241. Is that correct? Did it take it all and mush it into one F-tag 550?
Yes, Laura, it sure did. And new language has been added also. And what the new language does is sharpen the focus to the individual needs of each resident and in preserving the rights and dignity of each resident. I encourage everyone to follow along with the podcast by downloading Appendix PP of the State Operations Manual. And you can find that at www.cms.gov. It's available to anyone. And I suggest to the communities that I visit, I always suggest download that, put it on your desktop, provide your staff with the keys so that they not only survive that survey process, but they become an active participant in preparation for the survey as well as the survey itself.
I think that's a good point. It's like they gave us the rule book and the answers to all the questions to the test, right?
Yes.
So why not keep it right there? So anyway, well, thanks for joining us today, everyone, with our first in our series of podcasts outlining the F tags and the added regulations for the final rule. I hope you found this discussion today on 550 resident rights to be beneficial. And remember, what we're going to do now is in the coming weeks, we are going to explore each of the 49 substandard quality of care F tags. So we're going to have quite a few podcasts for you to listen in on, and we'll do them one by one. And Jennifer, I'd like to also thank you very much for your time today. And we look forward to our next discussion. Can you tell us which F tag we're going to work on next?
Yes, absolutely, Laura. And thank you for having me. I am enjoying this, and this will be a wonderful way to get this new information out to everyone. But the next F-tag that we will discuss is F-558, Reasonable Accommodation of Needs and Preferences.
That's wonderful. All right. Thank you for now. We'll talk to you all soon.
Legal disclaimer. Life Care Services, LLC is not engaged in rendering legal advice. Therefore, any information provided in this podcast, although intended to be correct, is also not intended to replace or supersede the advice of your legal counsel. Also, thank you to Ben Sounds for the music provided in this podcast.